So good afternoon, folks. I know it's been a long day. We're going to keep going. We want to get you out of here in about 50 minutes' time. Does that sound like a good plan? So we have about 50 minutes allocated for this session, so we're going to pile right into it and move as quickly as we can and still provide you with a bit of information. My experience with LGLA is this is the death zone for speaking. People are tired. You've had a long day with lots of data. So eventually maybe one of the head table will tap dance just to keep this interesting for you every once in a while. We'll let them self-select here. We're very democratic. It won't be me. Not that democratic. So moving forward, the whole purpose of this session is as newly elected officials and returning officials, there's all kinds of local government organizations that are going to assist you and be key players as you deliver services to your residents and your businesses. So as you sit around your board tables and your council tables, there are lots of players that you will interact with. And we wanted to take a few minutes to introduce about five of those entities specifically to you. The second thing we wanted to do is introduce them to you in a framework that really promotes and shows how a collaborative effort has got us to where we are today and how that works for BC. So if you go back to even the comments at noontime from those of you who heard from Connie Fair from BC Assessment, she talked about three projects they're working on with BC Assessment around mapping and some things that can really increase the assessment value in your community and allow you to achieve more revenues without raising taxes. One of the key elements that she emphasized was that they need to get out and work with local governments in order to achieve that, and that they need cooperation from local governments on the mapping area and sharing of information and what. And it's that kind of framework that we're going to present presentation in this afternoon. So joining me, and I will say I've worked in other provinces in this country, there's some models here like MFA, Municipal Finance Authority, Municipal Insurance Authority that don't exist in all other provinces, and that would be great models for others to emulate. So you do have a very unique model here based on a collaborative approach. We really want to encourage that. So we're going to begin with an overview of different types of collaboration. I'll give a bit of an overview. Then we're going to have a panel of representatives from some of the various organizations come up and give you about 10 minutes about their organization. The panelists will be joining us from BC Assessment is Grant McDonald. Grant's a deputy assessor in Vancouver CDSCI office. From the Local Government Management Association, we have Corinne Becker here. Corinne's past president of the organization, active member, and a CAO currently in Squamish. From the Ministry of Community Sport and Cultural Development, local governments in BC, we have a unique relationship with the ministry responsible for local government. Happy to have them here today. Happy to have Nicola Moratz, who brings lots of experience to that position, was around in the development of the community charter days, has seen a lot in the ministry and is a great go-to person. So she's going to present from the ministry. Just sort of moving right into the presentation, I just wanted to quickly show you by list. I think George Abbott, when he gave his presentation, said, which one of you will be here in 30 years sort of giving this presentation? Whichever one of you is here in 30 years talking about the last 30 years of local government, we'll use this list, and the list will likely be even longer if we continue with the current model and collaboration. And the list will, from a collaborative point of view, even change or amend along the way. The point of this is to show that we've developed a lot of organizations over the years, and we've developed them typically for very unique circumstances, based on conditions and necessities at the time and based on common sense at the time. UBCM was created collectively by local governments in 1905. You have a local government management association created in the 1919 that really still exists today on a collaborative basis. It doesn't make sense for each local government to be providing professional training for your staff. It makes sense to collaborate on that. The ministry has an overarching need of this, and we'll get into that in a minute. Regional districts, you've just heard lots about. Municipal Finance Authority is a very unique model, and it doesn't exist in very many other parts of the country. It's something that's quite special in BC. BC Assessment Authority, does it make sense? And if you look at the evolution of local government in this country, you'll see that initially local government started out with assessors on staff and did their own assessment and then did their own tax billing. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense in this day and age. It makes sense to have it done uniformly and done by one organization. Municipal Insurance Association, I'll get into it a little bit later, but Municipal Insurance Association was created due to a crisis in the insurance industry when local governments in BC couldn't get liability insurance. Very, very significant need at the time and a very interesting result. As you move into the more modern and more recent years, Civic Info is really a collaboration of local government entities, players in the local government field, which recognize the need to collaborate on information needs, new data, policies, a real go-to place to find information. It's a great resource. And then finally, even more recently, there's been a recognized need for continuing excellence in the training of elected officials like yourself, and the Local Government Leadership Academy is a collaborative. It's comprised of a board that makes up all the players in local government in BC. Just going to quickly just go through the types of collaboration. We see collaboration on a level in between governments, between UBCM and the ministry. We see it in management capacity building, so through the Local Government Management Association. We call them helper organizations, but there are other players that will come across your board tables, your council tables, that you will continue to hear about, such as MFA, MIA, Civic Info, and Local Government Leadership Academy. As well, I'd point out to you that within the local government sector, there is a number where you, as local governments, are the owners of these entities. You retain autonomy. You come up with formulas on your own, processes that work on your own, and that they are exclusively local government. There are other forms of collaboration between levels of government that involve the province more directly and other levels of government more directly and increasingly with First Nations. I would suggest to you that intergovernmental partnerships, they're a key part of the local government system. We can do more if we do it through organizations like this in British Columbia than we can achieve on our own as individual local governments. With 192 local governments, we'll have a pretty complicated array and framework out there if we don't use collaborative umbrella organizations. They work best. Obviously a contradiction in terms, but you can't have a collaborative organization imposed on you. So they work best when they're not imposed by anybody and the provincial government. And I have to say the provincial government support this model in British Columbia because it makes sense. You don't get duplication and you get a solid basis and a professional delivery. There has to be a clear case for collaboration and services. And the circumstances that drove you to create an organization at one time may change over time, and organizations can and will evolve, and they have evolved. And you have to maintain core local autonomy. This is about local government. It is about the services that you deliver at the end of the day. So you have to maintain a local government emphasis on them. You will have custom governance for each organization. You will have slightly different funding and service delivery models. Case studies. We're going to look at a couple of case studies quickly, but we're going to look at an example of pooled borrowing, where local governments come together to pool their borrowing. If you are one local government, if you think about it and you need to go to the market, would you be better off on your own trying to secure debt financing, or would you be better off in a pooled environment? That's what MFA is all about. Same is true for the Municipal Insurance Association. It's a manner of taking your risk and sharing it through the Municipal Insurance Association. BC Assessment will show us that there's a consistent approach to property value assessment. The ministry has, we said, have an overarching approach to this and a regulatory function, and they actually act very collaboratively with the ministry, with local governments and UBCM as well. And then LGMA will definitely come forward and have a local government management association talking about the way that they collaboratively deliver professional development for management. If you look at this with your communities in the middle and look at the various players around the outside that support you as you go through as councils and boards, we're going to take a look at a few of the circles here. I'll start today. We don't have MFA here, so I'll give about a three-minute overview on Municipal Finance Authority. Formed in 1970, a very unique model in that the biggest region in the province to the smallest village each have the same access to debt financing. And as I said earlier, would you be better off if you were a small local government trying to go to the market on your own, or would you be better off in a pooled manner? They each pay the same interest rate and share the benefits, and MFA are a well-recognized organization, well-respected both provincially and nationally. We've had international organizations and delegations in through UBCM through some of the international work we do, and they're always interested in the MFA model and the banking model that they have here because they don't see that in their own countries. For the past many years, MFA has secured a AAA credit rating. It has the lowest costs of financing when you compare it to other municipalities in the country. So you're very fortunate here to have a AAA credit rating. With that comes, obviously, lower borrowing costs than you would if you had a poorer credit rating. The collaboration, though, is based on local governments guarantee each other's debt within each regional district. There's a borrowing formula and borrowing limits that are established, and there's a debt reserve fund. What are the services they provide? And we'll try to do the same case study for each of the five. What's the case? What's the services they provide? In the case of MFA, they provide services if you're building a large capital project or a capital project you need funding. They'll provide the project funding. If you have an interim short-term funding need, you can go through MFA for that as well. That's what it's there for. They provide investment pooling of surplus funds. The local government leadership academy, for example, is backed by a trust. The trust is held by UBCM. Rather than us out investing it, we put it in a very secure form of investment through the MFA. It just makes sense for us. It's within our own community. They do a leasing program, and MFA recognize the value of you are dealing with very complex matters coming across your board and council tables. It makes sense to have a highly functioning, well-trained, elected leadership. And so MFA will put money into education and local area sponsorships. They and all the other players here are key sponsors of the Local Government Leadership Academy events. In terms of management, they have a small staff. They're based in the Victoria region. They're based in Saanich right now. So they have a small staff. They will go outside and retain specialist external service providers when they need to. In terms of governance and funding, and this is important, all local governments have an interest in the success. They have representation from all 28 regional districts that come together. They have 38 members appointed annually. There is no provincial representation on the MFA board. So it's entirely a local government board comprised of elected officials of local government. You might call it an executive. They call it a board of trustees of 10. They're elected annually from, once again, within the elected membership. And the chair is elected annually by members. Financial self-sufficiency, there's no provincial funding, there's not a tax burden, and when investments earn more than budgeted, the excesses are returned to the members. The key features of this one, they've been around for 40 years. They do have a history of proven success. It's very key. They represent all areas of the province. They represent large municipalities like yours. They represent all the folks that were into the session yesterday from smaller municipalities in all corners of the province. The size that they bring provide economies of scale. They get access to markets during unstable periods. And, you know, if you look back in 2008, there was a problem with certain parties securing debt in about that time. In that time of uncertainty, MFA were able to go to the market at that time and secure debt financing for the needs of our members. There's independence from the provincial government, but it's really important to state that there's a lot of cooperation with the provincial government. Province share our interests in this in the sense that they want a stable, fiscally sound system of local government in this province. So when need be, they have been supportive in a regulatory fashion and in other supportive fashions. It's really, and I'm not with MFA, but whenever the chair has come forward before, they always stress no MFA borrower has ever defaulted on a loan. And that's really important to remember. And they do have a commitment to education and local area sponsorships. So that's the first circle. I'm going to turn the next one over to Grant for a quick discussion on the BC Assessment Authority, and he'll take you through a little bit more.
Thanks, Gary. Nice to be with you this afternoon. I have, I think there's four slides here, so I think we should be able to move through these fairly quickly. I know you've had an early start today, and it's probably feels like a long day. So my name is Grant MacDonald. I'm one of the deputy assessors in the Vancouver office. And a little bit of history about BC Assessment, some of the stuff you probably are familiar with, but I'll give you some little nuggets and some stats, and then a little bit of information about the services we provide. So as on one of the earlier slides, we were formed back in 1974, largely in response to something Gary mentioned there. It did not make a lot of sense to have, either from an efficiency or a consistency standpoint, dozens and dozens of municipalities all doing their own sort of assessments in-house. At least the perception there, too, I think, was that it wasn't really sufficiently arm's length. So we were formed to be independent of local government. I think one of the key features of that original decision that has contributed both to our continued independence and relative longevity is that it was an all-party recommendation, that committee. It wasn't a sort of partisan political decision. So the Assessment Act is the piece of legislation that guides and enshrines our commitment to uniformity and consistency across the province. And I think at its most simple, our mandate is really, you could describe it as to establish and maintain assessments that are uniform across the entire province. So that's exactly what we do in a nutshell. I don't think we would be as successful and as closely integrated with either local government or any of our other partners if it wasn't for the fairly extensive collaboration that's ongoing. And I'll cover off some of that in a later slide. The fact that our valuation work forms the basis for about $6.8 billion worth of property tax revenue that supports all communities across the province, I think, is fairly well known. But we're also responsible for administering all the exemptions that apply on properties, whether those are ones that council approves permissively or whether those are statutory exemptions. And we also, of course, have to place all the properties in one of the particular property classes. It could be Class 1 residential, Class 6 commercial, farmland, or forestry. And that's fairly important in a system that has variable mill rates. Back in 1974, the total assessed value of all the properties in the province was $42.2 billion. And today, we're up to $1.1 trillion. One of the things that strikes me is that we've doubled the number of property folios in the time that we've been in existence, but we now administer that with 660 staff, which is less than the 700 we had back in the 70s. Perhaps not surprisingly, BC Assessment is the largest employer of professional appraisers in the province, and it's important to emphasize the collaborative nature of our relationship with the taxing authorities and to stress that those relations go beyond just providing an annual roll. 161 municipalities, 29 regional districts, and I think about 90 First Nations bands now that we contract to provide services for. So what are the services provided? Obviously, the annual assessment roll, as well as the revisions and the supplementaries that flow from that. I'm a firm believer in the advantages of an annual market-based value system. I think it's easy to explain to the public, to anybody that's involved in the process, and I think it compares fairly favorably with some of the alternatives, whether it's jurisdictions across Canada that only do periodic updates, and often the market gets out of sync with the assessments, or other things like California's fairly diversive and divisive Proposition 13, which is predicated on paying your taxes based on what you paid for it maybe 15 years ago. So it's annual. It keeps up with the market. Our valuation date is 1st of July every year. It's very stable. I think it's widely accepted. There's only a small percentage of our customers that appeal their assessment in any given year. The roll is subject, of course, to checks and balances. There's a property assessment review panel that sits February to March, and then the secondary assessment appeal board runs throughout the year. We also provide local government with data advice that gives information about ownership changes, about address changes, pretty important for your tax billing. Non-market change information is provided every year, which summarizes all the non-market aspects of the roll growth. We have we maintain a massive database of property information called ValueBC, and there's a whole series of reports that are regularly accessed, and we provide customized reports to your staff And those are all available through Shared Services BC and Assessment Link BC. More recently, we've collaborated with local government on a couple of data and cost-sharing initiatives. I'm not going to repeat things that Connie Fair, I think, talked about earlier on today, but the desktop review, the parcel map BC, the integration with the Land Titles Office, all of those things that are moving forward. We're obviously leveraging technology so that we can do desktop review. It's not like the old days where we had boots on the ground, as it were, with people out there knocking on doors. That's sort of by exception in this day and age. Corporately, we've adopted what we call a no surprises policy. So that means all our clients should have early warning if there are any issues that are going to impact you, whether those are appeals that may result in resetting of values that can be significant in some cases, whether it's about market movement or whether it's about proposes to legislation. We've got 15 offices across the province, and we're putting more and more information online every year. I don't know if you've had a chance to look at the eValue BC enhancements that we have this year, but we've got a significant amount of information on there, and it's a little more intuitive to use. It's map-based. There's better information there. It's easier to search and find what you're looking for. So in terms of the governance and financing, we are a Crown corporation. We're overseen by a cabinet-appointed board. Richard Taylor, who was here yesterday, is our vice chair. Judy Rogers is the board chair, and Connie Fair, our CEO, was here at lunchtime. She's supported by a six-person executive team. We report to the Ministry of Community Sport and Cultural Development. We're financially self-sufficient to the extent that our modest levy makes up about 95% of our annual budget. And to give you some context there, the cost for assessment services is around $43 per folio. The remaining 5% of our budget comes from sales of data. Some of that is contracted to organizations like LandCore, who take our information and package it and resell it. Some of it is customized reports. We're trying to balance off that, you know, need to get that revenue along with the government's intent and our desire to have open data wherever possible as well. So that's a little bit of a balance. We've already made information available free to organizations like UBC, so they can use that for research purposes. There are no charges there. It should be noted, I think, that the funding for the appeal, the two levels of appeal system that I was talking about earlier, that's completely funded by BC Assessment as well. So our accountability to the provincial government and the public is primarily encapsulated in our three-year service plan, which has all the critical components of our annual commitments, and that again is available if anybody wants to read through that on our website at bcassessment.ca. So some of the key features, we measure our roles in various ways. Obviously, there are a whole series of statistical measures that we use. We exceed the standards that are set by the International Association of Assessing Officers. They're the sort of guiding light for our profession, and we do that consistently every year. We are constantly striving to try and improve customer service standards. We're consulting with local governments again around the second phase of improved customer standards. We're just monitoring that right now. And we also have risk-to-role reporting that we do all the time. I personally and all my colleagues around the province get out at least a couple of times and try and have face-to-face meetings with staff just to make sure that they're up to date and we're giving them early warning about any issues that might be coming down the pipe, especially as it relates to those high-profile appeals. One of the things that I'm pleased about is that we don't have, historically, we had a bit of an overhang, and sometimes those appeals were not dealt with particularly quickly, and now the board is pretty much caught up, and we really don't have, unless it's something that's contingent on the outcome of a court case, we typically do not have a big overhang of risk that is multiple year. We try and run through those and deal with them all within a sort of 12-month calendar wherever possible. So corporately, we've sort of encapsulated our goals and strategies and performance measures under five headings. I'm not going to go into too much detail, but number one would be people and culture. We're particularly interested in having an engaged workforce. Secondary is the customers, and that's you as well as the public. We're constantly working to improve those scores. We do surveys fairly regularly. The last time we did that for the public, we had an approval rating of about 84% from the public, and to my mind, a remarkably high 98% approval rating from local government. Lots of relationships, including partnerships and various types of collaboration, whether through the service standards or liaising with organizations like LGMA, UBCM, GFOA, all of those organizations we're closely integrated with. Our products and services would be number four. We want to be timely, accurate, and as reliable as possible. Connie talked about the building plans, the building permit one. We also have building plans. I find it remarkable in this day and age that we still, in some cases, are trying to encourage taxing authorities to get on board with us to provide us with electronic plan data. Typically, in some cases, we're still going to municipal hall and going through paper copies of plans and taking information like that. I think we sort of need to keep moving those things forward. We can do that a little more effectively. Lastly, the sort of effectiveness piece. We're trying to leverage innovation and technology wherever possible. We've got a model at the moment that we're working on 3D modeling, which, just to give you a very quick sense of what that is, we can look at a downtown condo and we can place ourselves now with this 3D technology as though we're on the 15th floor. So you can look out and determine the view 360 degrees. You might have seen this stuff demonstrated. It's pretty remarkable. And things like that can be huge, have a huge impact on values, whether you can see the mountains or whether you're looking at the back of somebody else's condo. We are held up as an exemplar internationally in our business, and I know just from my experience in the last few years, we have hosted delegations from places as far apart as the US, China, New Zealand, Scotland, Korea, and Tokyo. They've all just been through our Vancouver office. Our low appeal rates that I talked about, less than 2% annually, so we take that as something of an endorsement of what we're doing. Not everybody agrees with us all the time, but by and large, there's a fairly wide acceptance. So our aim increasingly is just to be seen as a trusted source of property information, not just the more narrow assessment piece, but we have to make sure that we don't lose focus of what has helped us get through the 40 years, which is making sure that we're looking after our core business as well. And I'll be around if there's any questions later on. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Grant. I'll actually talk about the next circle for a couple of minutes here, the Municipal Insurance Association. So go back to, mid-1980s. As I said earlier, local governments in BC and elsewhere in the country were having a significant challenge accessing and securing municipal liability insurance. So if you think about your own budget structure and your own board structure and your tax rates, you generally try to minimize the unknowns when you set your tax rate, and you assume that you've managed your risk. And if you're unable to secure liability insurance and you're setting a tax rate in a budget, it could be blown out of the water with a particular claim here or there, and it obviously doesn't make for a very stable situation. So that was the challenge facing some local governments in the mid-1980s, and the Municipal Insurance Association was discussed and formed through some of the players in the local government system. UBCM had a role in that at the time, and then it spun out and become a local government entity that's on its own. So what does it provide? It provides access to liability insurance for local governments, and it's coverage to local government's need for various types and various limits. It provides economies of scale in administration and access to the insurance markets. The collaboration is based on, and this is important, local governments guarantee to share each other's costs of liability settlements. It's an insurance exchange, and the rates are influenced by experience and risk management. What are the services provided? Comprehensive liability insurance is provided, and MIA obviously recognizes the value of keeping successful claims to a minimum, and keeping loss to a minimum. So one of the things that they invest in services is risk management training. And they provide it through a model of in-house staff and specialist external service providers and reinsurers. In terms of governance and funding, you as local governments and those of you that choose to participate in MIA, it's voluntary, are both owners and clients. The board is comprised, we talked about MFA, which is comprised entirely of municipal elected officials. MIA is entirely local government as well, except the board is comprised of a mix of both elected and staff officials from local governments. The chair is elected annually by the board. Once again, you see financial self-sufficiency. There's no provincial funding required to sustain it. And when surpluses emerge, excess is returned to the members, and MFA does pay a dividend back when there is a surplus. Key features. We think it's a BC success story in turning a crisis into a model. It's been one that's been looked at by other jurisdictions as well. It provides stability and cost. It maintains liability insurance coverage needed for local government financial security. So once again, when you're setting your budgets, you need to make sure you've minimized risk. It has a board comprised of local government elected officials and staff, and it rewards those who actively manage risk, and it's not for profit. It's owned by you, and you choose your voluntary membership is valued within it. At this point in time, we'll move on to the next circle, and that's the Ministry of Community, Sport and Cultural Development, and I'll ask Nicola to come forward.
Great. Thanks, Gary. As was noted on one of the first slides, we've been around under various names since 1934. It was much easier to explain what I did when we were called Ministry of Municipal Affairs. But now we're called Ministry of Community, Sport and Cultural Development. But I think a constant in that history has been that the ministry is part of the local government system. It's not separate from it. It's not somehow lording over the local government system. It is a partner in the local government system, and that's been an important theme. So why does collaboration matter from the ministry perspective? There's a number of reasons, depending on which perspective you look at it from. From the perspective of citizens, we have the expectation, I think, across Canada that increasingly that citizens want all governments to make accountable decisions, make effective decisions, make decisions that are responsive to their expectations. They want quick, immediate responses to their problems, and they often don't differentiate amongst orders of government. They're not exactly sure whether something is delivered provincially, locally, or federally, and they don't probably at the end of the day care that much so long as it's delivered well and effectively. And so that, of course, requires collaboration in a lot of cases to make that happen. Looking at it from a local government perspective, there's real importance in local government autonomy, but autonomy doesn't mean isolation. And so there's a need to engage with the province and the federal government and local governments and First Nations in order for there to actually be an effective collaborative system. The province's perspective is that it recognizes the vital role of local governments in the day-to-day lives of citizens and the important role of local governments in working on larger regional and provincial matters like public health. We heard in the last session about economic development that's happening now in Metro Vancouver. Those are those bigger, messier issues, really important issues that have a large amount of provincial interest, but the province can't do those by itself either. And now, all this need for collaboration and requirement for collaboration doesn't necessarily mean it's smooth sailing, right? Like any relationship, there's different points of views and disagreements. But I think another perspective that's been important in this whole history is that working together and collaborating is about looking at it over the long haul. And the goal is to arrive at solutions that best serve communities and the different interests. So in that context, what do we actually do? There's six areas of service, I think, that the ministry, primarily through what's called the local government division, provides. And we're pretty small. I think we're, about 100 staff? We're about 100 staff located in Victoria. So that's not a lot. We provide these kinds of services to all local governments throughout the province. naturally, I think there's a tendency for us to provide more services or be asked for more support from smaller places. But that doesn't mean that we don't also get involved in larger urban issues as well, because we do. So I'm just going to very quickly run through each of these bullets. There's the legislative framework. You've heard a lot about the legislative framework today in all your local government law sessions. Well, our minister, as the minister responsible for local government, is the minister responsible for those legislative pieces, so for the Local Government Act, the Community Charter. So if there's going to be amendments to those acts and there is an active legislative program, she's the one who ends up taking those into the House and the amendments and leading those amendments. So that's important. So you would have all experienced a fairly recent legislative change to the legislative framework, as you would have been running for office in part now under the new Local Elections Campaign Finance Act, and you will be filing your disclosure statements very soon under that legislation. So that's a new addition to the kind of core suite of local government legislation. So we do that, and then structural change, that's an area that I'm directly involved in. We are the province, through the ministry, is responsible for the process of creating and restructuring local governments. So that's municipal incorporations, that's boundary changes, that's amalgamations, if there were to be amalgamations. It's all those things that basically go to, you know, what are the lines on the map that show what a local government is. And there's various legal instruments that go along with that, the letters patent that actually express where those boundaries are, and various other pieces. Strategic oversight and approvals. Local governments are highly autonomous in BC. Historically, there were quite a few points at which the ministry would actually get involved and require an approval, either through approval of the minister or through the approval by a position that's called the Inspector of Municipalities. Over the years, those approvals have really diminished. You know, at the same time as greater autonomy was happening for local governments, we were ratcheting back approvals because they just weren't there for no particular reason anymore. They weren't serving any particular purpose. However, there are a few approvals that remain, and these ones, I think, in terms of the whole system, we feel are pretty important, and that's primarily the approval of long-term capital borrowing bylaws. That's done by the Inspector of Municipalities, and the receipt of other financial information by the inspector, because that ties in with what you heard Gary talking about the role of the MFA and how it works to ensure that the safeguards are in place so that they can secure the low-cost borrowing. Grants. You've probably heard about grants from various points along the way today. Just going to briefly mention, there's two kind of general types of grants. There's unconditional grants. Each year there's $55 million roughly worth of unconditional small community and regional district grants. Small community grants go to communities of population less than 5,000. Regional districts get some money for their ongoing operations. There's also the traffic fine revenue program, returns 100% of net proceeds from traffic fines to municipalities of more than 5,000, because they're the folks who pay 70% or more of their policing costs. And those monies are to be used for community safety initiatives. Infrastructure grants, that's obviously a big area of interest. Typically, we fund infrastructure grants in partnership, so cost sharing with local governments and the federal government. And of course, most recently, just this last fall, there's been the launch of the new Building Canada Fund, Small Communities Fund program, and with the provincial and federal governments allocating about $109 million each. That program will run until 2024, supports infrastructure projects in communities with less than 100,000 people. Of note, the current intake closes on February the 18th, 2015, so if your community is eligible and you have a project and you haven't submitted yet, please do. There are folks waiting in Victoria to receive your application. And the Small Communities Funding Office operates at the same time, obviously, as gas tax funding, which I think UBCM presented on earlier this morning. The last three pieces are advice, problem solving, and relationship management. And that's just a bundle of way of describing that the ministry tries to be a real resource for local governments in supporting advice, problem solving on a huge variety of issues. Governance changes, land use planning, infrastructure, administration, elections, building relationships, resolving disputes. We do that both informally. We have staff who look after different regions and try to answer questions and help out. And as well, there's some formal roles as well through formalized dispute resolution processes, especially around regional growth strategies and regional services. So, just in generally managing or building the relationships with the other partner organizations, especially with UBCM and LGMA. And, of course, being part of something as great as the Local Government Leadership Academy. And all this is done basically under the overarching idea that this is a government-to-government relationship between the provincial government and local governments. And that's enshrined in principles in the community charter. There's mechanisms in there like the requirement to consult with UBCM if there's an amendment to the local government legislation or the community charter. And there's other dispute resolution mechanisms. There's other ways of implementing those principles. So if you put that all together, I mean, why is it that, you know, we think we're part of a successful local government system in BC? It's because we have a capable provincial ministry that's got a track record of being part of a system working with local governments. There's an effective local government association in UBCM and other really capable partner agencies like MFA, LGMA, and others. We've got this long history of joint problem solving, and that's the most operative part of it, I think. It's got to be the focus on the long game, because that way you're able to work your way through the short-term disputes, the differences of opinion, but recognize this is a relationship. We've been at this as a ministry since 1934, and we have every intention of continuing. Thanks very much.
Moving right along to the next circle and our final presenter, I'll ask Corinne to come forward and talk about the Local Government Management Association.
Thanks, Gary. Good afternoon. I'm very pleased to join my colleagues here today to share a little bit of information with you about the Local Government Management Association and how we support local government systems in BC. The LGMA, like LGLA, was formed with the blessing of UBCM in 1919. A resolution at the convention in 1919 actually formed LGMA with the mandate to encourage the interchange of ideas and to foster a greater efficiency of municipal officers in the performance of their duties. The LGMA continues to uphold these ideals. As Gord McIntosh referenced this morning, a number of years ago, local government morphed from being departments that were driven by elected officials to be departments that were led by management professionals. Our members include the municipal and regional district managers, administrators, clerks, corporate officers, treasurers, and other senior managers, and from virtually every municipal government and regional district in the province. But LGMA is a different animal. When you go from elected bodies to professional managers, being an engineer in a private firm is completely different than being an engineer in a local government. And as such, the needs of supporting those managers are completely different, and that's where the Local Government Management Association comes in. We're there to promote management and professional leadership within the local government context throughout British Columbia, and that's where we excel. We are a nonprofit professional association. We are neither an advocacy organization nor a labor union. We are a professional development and training organization, and we're here to support our members, who in turn support the local governments around the province. We strive to be responsive, innovative, and dynamic in promoting professional excellence for the entire local government system in British Columbia. The LGMA has worked in collaboration with key partners since its inception, recognizing that we have an important role in supporting the local government system through the provision of professional development, training programs, and services to appointed officials to assist them in serving their councils, boards, and communities. Collaboration has and will continue to be the cornerstone of our organizational's growth and achievements as a professional association. And in fact, we've received international recognition for our collaborative volunteerism through invitations from the United Nations and the Federation of Canadian Municipalities to present our model globally. And in fact, we're currently working on establishing a similar system in Tanzania, and our executive director is off there next week with the group that's going to help share our model and how we do what we do. The local government system in British Columbia has evolved from a model of collaboration, bringing key partners together. The LGMA has played an important role in this evolution and continues to work closely with our partners to support a robust local government system. We are dedicated to supporting excellence in local government by providing high-quality, practical training and resources, encouraging the development of professional networking and connections, and facilitating the exchange of ideas and best practices amongst our members. And in fact, if I have an issue, I can pick up the phone and talk to virtually every municipality around the province to help me resolve my problem. Our policies and programs uphold best practices, professional standards, and a code of ethics to ensure that the elected representatives of the residents of even the smallest communities in British Columbia have access to the highest caliber of local government managers. We are committed to supporting a workforce of smart and capable local government managers, the managers that you will rely on for the daily operations of your municipalities. Over the last decade, we've had 10,000 local government employees participate in professional development programs organized by the LGMA. We have a number of signature programs that you may hear about through your conversations with your local government employees. We offer them annually, and we aim to provide the best learning environment for our members to explore new legislation, policy, technological changes, and emerging trends in local government context in British Columbia. Through the Municipal Administration Training Institute, a.k.a. MATI, the LGMA provides educational courses on community planning, human resources, approval of subdivisions, communication, leadership. We train local government managers in the specific technical requirements of their jobs and help them prepare for and respond to new legislation or emerging practices that may affect the citizens in their area. And I think this is one of the areas that local government is really strong. We are a unique animal, and being able to share those concepts and ideas and help with the training of new employees that come into the local government fold, we do feel we play a vital role there. Our programs continue to evolve, responding to the needs of the local government professionals and the local governments they serve. We are pleased to be involved with the delivery of a new advanced management program, the Successful CAO. We're working on succession planning, recognizing that we've got a number of changes in the wind. Our CAO and Clerks and Corporate Officers Forums and Administrative Professional Conference are annual opportunities for senior managers to meet with their counterparts to address issues affecting their roles and professional duties. Every year, we draw upwards of 250 senior managers to our annual conference, which is a professional development opportunity with both general leadership workshops as well as technical and specialized sessions developed by volunteers to respond to the emerging issues in local government. In addition to the MATI and professional conferences, LGMA also provides specialized skill training workshops to respond to the needs and demands of our members, along with the resource materials to ensure local government staff have the most current legal, legislative, and technical information to do their jobs. Key areas for both skills training and resource manuals include the freedom of information, approving officers, elections, governance and administration to support better operations of volunteer and composite fire departments. None of what we deliver happens in isolation, though. The vast majority of our programs we deliver use volunteer members of our association or external partners, such as consultants, law firms, or ministry staff, who volunteer their time, which reinforces the peer support of improving local government systems and building peer-to-peer professional development opportunities. Our collaborative voluntary model is heavily reliant on not just our volunteer energy, but the goodwill and technical knowledge and sponsorship funding from a number of critical partners. We work very closely with UBCM and LGLA and with universities and colleges to ensure their curriculums reflect the competencies required for local government management. Other partnerships have been instrumental in our success as a professional organization, such as Civic Info BC, Municipal Finance Authority, Municipal Insurance Association, Government Finance Officers Association of BC, and BC Assessment, just to name a few. We have just under 900 members currently. Our organizational structure includes a volunteer board with representation from 6 regional chapters, which roughly parallels the borders of the UBCM areas. We operate with a staff of 6 and a collaborative volunteer model made up of an extensive network of highly skilled and dedicated volunteer members. We receive no grant funding from local governments or direct funding from the provincial government beyond periodic contracts for specific projects. Virtually all of our revenues are derived from the sale of our courses, workshops, conferences, manuals, toolkits, membership fees, and advertising, sponsorship, and job posting income. With baby boomers approaching the retirement age, local governments across BC are facing an imminent skills and knowledge shortage. Many regional and municipal managers, administrators, clerks, treasurers, and other senior officials are soon ready to retire. We're seeing this happening already. When they do, they will hand the responsibility for the daily operations of BC communities to a new generation of managers. The LGMA is making sure that the new generation is ready to serve and support the highly complex operations of local government today. Our programs are famous for being tailored exactly to local government managers' needs, giving them timely and relevant information and tools that they can use to the minute they get back to their office. Managers learn alongside their counterparts from communities across the province, so they've got an instant group of peers that they can reach out to when they have issues. Those collaborative relationships benefit every community involved and save countless hours of information gathering and problem solving. And it's interesting, we talk about this one quite a bit, because if you have a conversation with somebody who's out there in the private sector, what we do in local government is unheard of. They would never share their corporate secrets on how they get their job done better. The LGMA services include a strong mentoring component, allowing members to tap into a network of experts across the province for advice and information sharing on all of our issues. This reinforces the professionalism of local government staff across BC. For almost a century, and in 4 years, we'll be celebrating our 100-year anniversary, we've been providing local government managers with the knowledge and tools they need to provide the best technical and operational services to elected officials so you can make informed decisions with confidence. If you'd like to learn more about the LGMA, I'm happy to chat with you, or you can check out the LGMA's website, which is lgma.ca. We have lots of information on there on the upcoming programs, and look forward to supporting you as you move forward with your new councils.
Thank you very much, Corinne. So just to conclude, I'd like to ask you to give a round of applause to our 3 organizations that presented today. I'd also like to acknowledge that each of the players at the table are also supporters of this event, and we do appreciate their ongoing participation and sponsorship of the events as well. And so please do pass that along to your respective organizations. Okay, important stuff. Dinner tonight. Dinner, you're on your own. It's been a long day. We're going to give you a whole 2.5 hours off to put your feet up, catch a bit of rest, recharge the batteries just a little bit. Tonight, we actually have something that I think is very interesting. It's usually very highly rated out of these sessions, and it's called the Mentors Panel. So it's an opportunity for you to come back and hear from a panel of your peers about questions like, how come it takes me 2 hours to buy a loaf of bread? How come I can't get away from the hockey rink without being accosted by 5 people? And people keep contacting me on Facebook I don't want to hear from. So it's kind of sort of questions like that, and how do you handle those and best practices? So we usually bring together a panel of your peers It'll start tonight back at 7:15 in this room. We're bringing in Mayor Greg Moore, Councillor Saab Dhaliwal, who's the UBCM president, Mayor Jonathan Cote of New Westminster, and Mayor Malcolm Brody. So not a shy group, one that'll be certainly willing to share their answers and responses with you. So please have a bite of dinner, come back and join us, ask those questions, and it's a lot better session with your participation. Thanks very much.